The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, this is Kevin McCullough. Thanks for listening to the Christian Outlook podcast, where we cover today's issues from a perspective that honors your Christian faith. Our podcast is brought to you through a partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I trust you'll enjoy.
I've been looking forward to this conversation. The Next Jihad is the title of the book. Well, in an appeal for religious freedom and human rights, my guest and his co-author, both faith leaders and self-described freelance diplomats, Reverend Johnny Moore, my guest, and his co-author, Rabbi Abraham Cooper, they released their new book, The Next Jihad. They expose the everyday horrors that Christian believers face in Nigeria, and the authors spotlight the enduring atrocities of religious persecution and the cost of global inaction. The book is rooted in firsthand testimonials and their on-the-ground experiences. The Next Jihad forewarns us about the dire but largely disregarded threat of terrorism seeking to eradicate Christians in Africa, either by forced conversion to Islam or by murder. The authors contrasting religious backgrounds, Moore an evangelical Christian, and Rabbi Cooper an Orthodox Jew, make this multi-faith collaboration an especially powerful argument for safeguarding religious tolerance and our shared human rights. Reverend Johnny Moore is a noted speaker, author, and human rights activist. He served as the president of Congress of Christian Leaders and is the founder of Kairos Company, one of America's leading boutique communications consultancies. He also is best known for his extensive multi-faith work on the intersection of faith and foreign policy. He serves as a presidential appointee to the United States Commission for International Religious Freedom and sits on many boards. And if I went through the very long list, we wouldn't have time for our interview, so I will leave it at that. But I am just delighted to have you with us, Reverend Johnny Moore. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Georgine. Good to be with you.
Well, first of all, let me ask you about your collaboration. You are an evangelical Christian. You've collaborated with an Orthodox rabbi, Abraham Cooper. How did the two of you come to this book and this subject?
Well, I really refer to Rabbi Cooper as my mentor. You know, he's someone who's influenced my life in a great way for a long period of time. But I met him back in 2017, I believe, maybe late 2016, when the Simon Wiesenthal Center honored a project that I was involved in to help rescue Christians from Iraq and Syria. And so I ended up receiving their Medal of Valor. But aside from that single event, I found Rabbi Cooper to be literally one of the wisest people I've met on the planet, a human rights activist for 50 years. And we've begun to collaborate all over the world. And actually, Georgine, it was Rabbi Cooper, the Orthodox Jew, that asked me, Johnny Moore, the evangelical Christian, when I was going to go to Nigeria because of all that was happening in Nigeria. So we decided we'd go together.
Oh, wonderful. In the introduction, you asked the question, what's going on in Africa? And it's an apt question because most of us don't know. You write that Africa is a continent that takes up much of our globe, but so little of our minds here in the West. It's an incomparably important place on our planet, yet too rarely captures the world's attention. Normally, it does so only during tragedy. There is a tragedy going on right now, a genocide, if you will, that most of us are unaware of.
Yeah, and it's been going on for a long time. Back when ISIS was at its height in Iraq and Syria in 2015, more Christians were dying in northeast Nigeria than Christians or Yazidis that were dying in Iraq and Syria. So this is, it's not a new crisis. Mm-hmm. It's an ongoing crisis that seems to be escalating, and the numbers are growing, and the world is becoming increasingly indifferent. And, you know, I'm not sure why people won't pay attention to it, but one of the convictions that I have is that the best way of sort of awakening the conscience of the world is to tell the stories of the victims. And so right before COVID-19 shut down the world, Rabbi Cooper and I spent several days in Abuja meeting with dozens and dozens of victims, hearing stories that I knew would be bad. But I got to tell you, Georgie, it was much, much worse than I even knew.
And it does beg the question, why aren't we hearing about these stories? The mainstream media's focus is on a lot of different things. We tend to think about terrorism in the Middle East. There's been a national election. We're in the middle of a pandemic. These are kind of current reasons one might look to as to why we're not hearing about what's happening in Nigeria, for example. But how do you explain the ignorance, even of the Christian community in general, of what's happening there and the threat not only to Nigerians and other African nations, but the threat to Europe, the United States, and other parts of the world?
And when you add on top of it, you know, when the media does report on it, they tend to report on it in a strange way, where they won't talk about the religious violence. They'll chop the violence off to climate change or to conflicts between herders and farmers, but they won't mention, you know, the fact that this is often religiously motivated. And by the way, it's important to all of us. I mean, Nigeria is the largest country, the most populated country in Africa. It has the 10th largest oil reserves in the world. It has the largest economy on the continent, and the countries surrounding it all have their own sort of terrorist insurgencies. And so what's quietly happening on the great continent and its perhaps most influential country is a catastrophe that could not only destabilize that nation, it could destabilize that whole part of the African continent, which would make the Syrian crisis look insignificant compared to what could happen there. But more importantly, it's the individual lives, you know, like the seminarian Michael Nnadi, who earlier this year at 18 years old was kidnapped in the middle of the night, found dead on the side of the road. And this was a rare circumstance where they actually caught the perpetrator. And the perpetrator, when he was asked why he killed him, he said he killed him because Michael just kept sharing his faith with him and he wouldn't stop. And it became annoying. And so he decided to, quote, send him to an early grave. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of Michael Nnadis. I mean, hundreds of villages, all the churches destroyed, all the homes burned to the ground, all the animals stolen. Circumstances that particularly alarmed Rabbi Cooper, whom I've written The Next Jihad with, because they segmented out communities. They stopped cars on the side of the road, and Muslims were freed, and Christian men were killed on the spot, and the young women were trafficked. This is happening every day, every single day.
Including today, right now. Let's talk about the perpetrators. Who are the perpetrators? What motivates them? And how are they being confronted by anyone to prevent this from expanding or moving forward?
Yeah, the three groups. The first is Boko Haram. You know, that's the group that most people have heard about. Ironically enough, you know, back in 2013, 2014, the Obama administration, for some strange reason, refused to designate Boko Haram a terrorist organization when they were beheading people, you know, in the name of their religious beliefs. But Boko Haram has been with us for a long time and hasn't been dealt with for a long time. Then there's ISIS in West Africa, ISIS attempting to reestablish itself in those countries. And then finally, and perhaps most alarmingly, there's a segment of Africa's largest tribe. The tribe is called the Fulani. There are 17 million of them alone in Nigeria. And most Fulani are good, wonderful people. But there's a small group of them, but a small group and a very large group of people who are appropriating the tactics of Boko Haram and ISIS in West Africa in the center part of Nigeria. So this terrorism used to be isolated to the northeast of the country in a relatively small area of a couple of states. But now in the whole center of the country, you have these militant Fulani, a segment of these Fulani tribespeople, you know, who are yelling Allahu Akbar as they attack villages in the middle of the night, killing thousands and thousands and thousands of people, displacing tens of thousands more. And ironically enough, in my research, you know, we discovered that on a number of occasions, you know, forensic evidence has been left behind, like rudimentary cell phones from the Fulani militants. And on one of the cell phones was the phone number of a number of senior people in the police forces and armed services in the country. And so, you know, at a minimum, this great ally of the United States, an important country that we love very much, you know, has severe corruption, which is inhibiting the prosecution of these perpetrators of genocide, of ethnic cleansing. I mean, that's their aim. They want to take out every Christian in the country and every Muslim that stands in their way.
We're talking with Reverend Johnny Moore, who, along with Rabbi Abraham Cooper, co-authored The Next Jihad, Stop the Christian Genocide in Africa. And if you have been unaware of what's happening there, this is an excellent book to become aware, and the stakes, not only for those who are directly being targeted, but for the rest of the world as well. Now, our temptation is to look at the broad implications of what's happening in Nigeria and elsewhere, and to consider how it might somehow be exported outward. But I appreciate that you focus our attention on what's happening to brothers and sisters in Christ on the ground right now, the price they are paying for faithfully following their faith. And I want to talk about the implications as well, but I think it's important that we look at who's being impacted and targeted by these perpetrators and what they hope ultimately to accomplish.
Well, and to do so, I the most important and powerful thing is to tell their stories. And
yes,
Georgine, there are a few of them that really touch me. I think there's one girl, probably many people listening to us have heard this name before, that her name is Leah Sherabu. So Leah was 14 years old, one of 110 young girls that were kidnapped by Boko Haram terrorists in Nigeria 2.5 years ago. When Boko Haram kidnapped them, it caused a massive, massive political problem in the country, you know, for the ruling government. They negotiated the release of the 110 girls. It's just that all the parents were waiting for the girls to be released in the buses. And then one parent, Leah's mom, Rebecca, as she tells the story, was looking around and she couldn't find her daughter. And all the other girls were there, but her daughter wasn't there. And she's getting more and more desperate. And she sees one of Leah's friends. So she runs up to Leah's friend. She says, "Where's Leah? Where's Leah? Where's Leah?" And then Leah's friend told her that all of the other girls were freed, but the terrorists wouldn't free Leah because Leah was the only Christian in the group. And Leah refused to convert to Islam. And she said, "You can take my life, but I will not change my religion." And this little 14-year-old girl with more faith than most pastors I know stared down these terrorists and remains in captivity today just because she would refuse to convert, you know, out of Christianity into Islam. And there's just story after story after story like that. Earlier this year, you know, a famous pastor in the country, in the northeast of the country, was beheaded on a live video because he would refuse to convert. And he leaves behind a widow and 9 children. And yet they hold their testimony as the most important thing in their lives. And so I think a lot of people listening to us think that all of this has sort of gone the way of history. Those terrible years of ISIS in Iraq and Syria, this is all gone, but it isn't gone. It's moved to a different part of the world. And I'm just telling you, if something isn't done, it's going to affect us all. But as a believing Christian, you know, I have to also say that some of the strongest faith I've seen in the world, you know, isn't in our gigantic churches in the United States of America or in Western Europe. It's in the testimonies of these everyday Christians in this persecuted part of Africa's most populated country,
who take their faith seriously and are empowered by the Holy Spirit to stand against those who would seek to destroy their lives. You write about deadly midnight raids, arson, kidnappings, rapes, forced conversions, overt slaughter. These are horrific stories that one might expect to find in the pages of the Old Testament. And yet in our day, this is what's occurring right now. Failure to respond to this in some constructive way certainly has implication for those who are suffering. But talk a bit about the broader implications if this is permitted to go on unchecked, if the world continues to look away. What can we expect as a result?
We can expect a humanitarian catastrophe unlike anything that we've seen. And that is saying something, having just come through the first decade of the Syrian conflict, and we watched how that upheaval affected almost the entire world, you know, and especially the neighboring countries in Europe. I mean, and here's the thing, like, I'm not here to, you know, to speak badly about Nigeria. I love Nigeria. I mean, these are amazing people. It's an amazing country, some of the most incredible people in the world. It's an ally of the United States, a critical ally, and it needs to stay that way. But the government in Nigeria, for whatever reason, is choosing not to take the action necessary, and they need to be called out on it. And that's one of the reasons why we went. It's one of the reasons why we've written the book. And it's not just on the United States to do something. It's also on Europe. You know, the United Kingdom gives $1 million a day, £1 million a day, rather, you know, to the Nigerians. It's time for all of the aid money given by the United States and the Europeans to be evaluated. It's time for the United States and the Europeans to send a clear message that if the Nigerian government doesn't fulfill its fundamental responsibility of protecting the innocent, then, you know, it's going to face consequences for that when it comes to our relationship. You know, and Georgine, all of this is in a democracy. You know, Nigeria is a democracy. This isn't a totalitarian dictatorship. So it's just got to end, and it's got to end right now. And also, you know, it's time for us to pray for these people. I mean, really, really intensely pray for these people. Educate ourselves on the issues. Give to the organizations that are helping those in need. Call our politicians, Democrat or Republican, and make sure that this is a priority for them. Now is the time to act. We will be forced to act if we don't get our act together.
Yeah. We're talking about the book, The Next Jihad, Stop the Christian Genocide in Africa. That's perhaps a great place to start to learn about what the situation is and how those who are fellow followers of Jesus, how they are suffering. You write about the moral imperative to act. And I think we can all feel that need to act. What can we do? What can be done to help as an average follower of Christ, as an average citizen? First of all, we need to be convinced that it's imperative to act. But then what can we do to help that's going to make a difference?
Well, and, you know, this is what united the rabbi and I. I mean, we're, you know, he's
yes.
an Orthodox Jew. I'm an evangelical Christian. But we both believe in action. You know, compassion requires action. You have to do something about it. You know, in the back of the book, we list a bunch of things that can be done. But let me just give, you know, a couple of real simple ones. Pray like you hope these people, like you hope someone would pray for you. Educate yourself so you know what's going on, including the stories of the victims. You can tell those stories. Send an email to your political leader's office today. Just go on the website, find the local leader, and say, "What are you doing about the crisis in Nigeria?" You know, and then finally, you know, help organizations that are helping those in need. You know, the thing about Nigeria is it has a huge Christian population. Every denomination is in Nigeria. The largest Assemblies of God communities outside of the United States are in Nigeria. Like, your church has some connection to the country. Like, it's time to help those churches in Nigeria cope with the crises that they're facing. Now's the time to do it. There are lots of other things that can be done, but those are a few quick ones you might remember.
Yes, and you'll find them in the book. Let me ask you how the Christian community is faring. Obviously, under this kind of ongoing, relentless pressure and danger, it takes its toll. How is the church in general holding up under this kind of challenge?
I mean, this is a miracle, right? I've spent my entire adult life helping persecuted Christians around the world, and I always find, like, I'm the one that's actually helped, you know, in the end. I mean, it keeps my faith alive. And I got to tell you, you know, the Nigerian church is strong. You know, I met a pastor who is on his second burned down church, and he reminded me of a modern day Apostle Paul. He's not going anywhere. They could take his church. They could take any little bit of money he has. They could take his food. They could burn down the building. He's just going to stay caring for those people. So it's a church that's alive.
Well, that's so encouraging. We have a great deal to learn from them, but we also have a great deal we can do to help support them, first by recognizing that moral imperative to act, and then to act constructively. Again, the book is titled The Next Jihad, Stop the Christian Genocide in Africa. The book is published by Thomas Nelson. And let me encourage you to read the book to learn more about what's happening in this country in Africa. And I think I appreciate, too, that you put it in context that the ripple effect, if left unchallenged, of what's happening there into Europe and other countries, including our own, is certainly sobering as well. The Next Jihad. Reverend Johnny Moore, thank you so much for your collaboration with Rabbi Cooper and for taking the time to talk with us about this important book today.
Thanks for shining a light on it.
Thanks for listening to Christian Outlook. Our program is coming to you today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy our podcast, take a moment and tell a friend to subscribe today.